All right, let's raise the tenor of the evening again. Let's have questions from the floor. Politics, politicians, who do we want to talk about? Who do we want to gossip about? What do we want to know? Do we have issues we care to kvetch on? Who has a query? We used to have, of course, you remember high school. We used to have a German teacher who always said, and now I will accept queries. And we were like,
yes. I'll start off by thanking you for being who you are and all that you say and do. And I'd like to ask you if you can help us find the humor in the fact that the Bush administration just paid $75 million to the database company that did such a great job in Florida black people off of the voting rolls.
Yes.
And now they've just gotten $75 million to target Hispanic and Latino Americans in a database across
it
the United States.
It is wonderful. Have you read that Greg
Where's the humor?
Greg Palast's book? Well, of course it's hilarious. You just don't have a strong enough stomach, darling. The mere thought that they would do this is so charming. This is the same sorry outfit that tossed all those people off the voting rolls in Florida. And they have been hired by the Bush people. Now, this is something you've got to like this. I mean, the looting started before Baghdad surrendered. They give the first two contracts to Halliburton and Bechtel. And nobody even felt the need to explain that it was done without, why it was done without competitive bidding. I mean, this is really wonderful in its way as a kind of new benchmark in chutzpah. You see, you need to appreciate that. And equally delightful news that they're going to pay these same jackasses who screwed up the election in Florida. Boy, this is great. I cannot wait to see who else is going to get a contract. I mean, doesn't it just make you want to fantasize? Harkin will finally get to drill for oil off the coast of Bahrain. It really is fabulous. There is a quote I wanted to read you just because I just ran across it, and it's so apposite. In a radio address in May 1940, during the defense buildup prior to the U.S. entry in World War II, President Franklin D. Roosevelt said, "Our present emergency and a common sense of decency make it imperative that no new group of war millionaires shall come into being in this nation as a result of the struggles abroad. The American people will not relish the idea of any American citizen growing rich and fat in an emergency of blood and slaughter and human suffering." We have another question.
Yes, my understanding is that the Federal Communications Commission is going to rule within the next month to make it basically legal for large corporations to own all of the media in the country, and I think put some controls on the internet as well. And there's been almost no public discussion about this. What, if anything, can be done within what, the next 27 days or whatever?
Oh, I'm a great believer in speaking right up. And let me tell y'all, we always think that we're such pygmies and nobody ever pays any attention to us. I have seen legislators go up to lobbyists and say, "George, I know I promised I'd vote with you on this, but there's been a flood of mail from home." They're talking about five letters. Now, I grant you that your state legislators are at a more neglected level of government. Nevertheless, what is interesting, and think about this, there are all around Washington on the Beltway, there are these firms, they're public relations firms, they're political public relations firms. And what they do is they produce something called political astroturf. What this is fake grassroots. They used to just, you know, have everybody who belonged to, say, the Tire Dealers Association send in identical cards saying, "Dear sir, I'm a tire dealer here and wherever, and I'm opposed to House Bill," whatever the deal was that might be bad for the tire dealers. And then they realized that, you know, Congress soon ignored that and discounted that because it was clearly organized, lobby-related, special interest crap. So these firms got more and more sophisticated. And now they're so good at imitating real people that you can read their memos and they do things like they advise you to purchase cards with little kittens on them and write in shaky letters because this is the kind of thing grandmothers do. These people get paid zillions and zillions of dollars to imitate the voices of concerned Americans. And you think your voice isn't worth anything? You should see the contracts these damn firms sign from the big special interests. And we can do it. We don't even have to fake it. Isn't it amazing? We can just raise hell. We really are concerned citizens. We really are speaking up. We really are going to call the FCC and tell those goddamn fools not to do this. You can do it.
Assuming that you're in charge of the world and money isn't an issue, who's on your short list as qualified people to run against George W.?
You know, I hate to answer that because, of course, I will always, you know, think of the right person later on. And I've always wondered why the political best in this country doesn't rise to the top. And, you know, you get all those sort of cynical people who say things like, "Now turds float," you know, with other charming thoughts. I thought Wellstone was one of the best I'd seen in a long time. And I was at a conference with some other political people about 3 weeks ago, and we actually held a panel called, you know, "Are there any other Wellstones out there?" And it turns out there are. There are quite a few. And we were, you know, people from all over the country in different states naming off the ones who look that good. Now, sometimes I know that if, I don't know whether, I'm sure this must be true in other states in the reverse. I mean, the Democrats probably do this to Republicans where they have a chance. But in Texas, the Republicans under Karl Rove, who unfortunately is very, very smart, have been deliberately targeting bright, promising young Democrats. They go after them very early. That's how they got Jim Hightower and some others in Texas. And so I just think, you know, when you see one bright, promising young politico coming along, you sort of have to form a protective phalanx and make sure they get to the next level. Now, I think, though, there's all kinds. I mean, when you think, you know, we always think that we're looking for a young Lincoln or somebody. No. When they first show up, they never look like they're going to be worthwhile. You really have to be prepared for the fact that the person who is going to turn out to be your hero, first of all, you will probably have to wait until he or she is safely dead before you can judge that they really were an excellent public servant, because you never know what they will do next. And really the unlikely ones. I mean, you know, you always have to add the caveat, had it not been for Vietnam, Lyndon Johnson would have been one of the greatest presidents in the history of this country. And, you know, as a human being, he was a real wart. We wouldn't have liked him. But he was a great, great politician, and he did good things for people, and that's kind of really all that counts. You know, as I've often said about their peccadilloes, I don't care who they screw in private as long as they're not screwing the public. It's very simple. I think we've got talent pools that have been totally overlooked. I'll tell you one that I believe in very strongly. Women of a certain age who have raised children and are looking at empty nests. All good mothers make good politicians. There are a lot of bad mothers in the world, but all good mothers make good politicians. There are two things that all good mothers know. They know what to do when there's two kids and one cookie. The first kid gets to divide the cookie. The second kid gets first choice which half he wants. All good mothers know this. The second thing that all good mothers know is what to do when there are two kids in the back seat hitting each other, each one of them claiming that the other one started it first.
You hit me first, I did not. You did too, I did not.
The good mother, if she is a good driver, will first pull over to the side of the road, but it has been scientifically proved that this is not necessary. You can, in fact, continue down the highway at a high rate of speed, doing a kind of one-third turn and throwing your voice. You have to use your best, this is your mother speaking voice. And what you say is, I don't care who hit who first. You will not stop. All political problems, from how to resolve the crisis over the state budget to how to achieve peace in the Middle East, are merely variations on two kids and one cookie and two kids hitting each other.
I'm not sure you answered that last question, Molly Ivins.
Yeah, I got so carried away by my own eloquence. I forgot. Oh, yeah, who should we run?
So in the true Molly Ivins tradition, I would ask that you still answer that question about who you think is out there that can effectively go after George W. Bush. So, but that's a...
Well, I'm a liberal, you know damn well. I'm supporting Howard Dean. He's at 2% in the polls and has the full weight of Vermont behind him. He is clearly our man.
All right.
Another no-hoper. Think of the great time we'll have supporting him.
Okay. I appreciate your answering that
and
question.
And I'm fully believe, as you know, the Molly Ivins theory is vote your heart in the primary, vote your head in the general.
But my question was, many of us, you included, got through Reagan, we got through Nixon, and for the first time in my life, as a friend of mine says, I am truly afraid of my government, and I am truly afraid of what is happening in the United States today. And at no time in my lifetime have I ever been so afraid of my government. And these are not my words. They are the words of a friend of mine, but they struck true for me. Yeah. And so my question to you is, are you afraid? And if so, what is our call to action that you would speak to us about in this time of what I think is almost terror?
Well, I don't use the word, I have not in 35 years of writing about politics used the F word. But no, I am like all of you, I am desperately worried. And the fact that I think that we should keep laughing anyway has nothing to do with the seriousness of the situation. It has with us has to do with us retaining our sanity. Because if we don't laugh, we will become genuinely afraid. We'll become bitter and cynical and angry and full of hatred, and we'll burn out and be no use to ourselves at all, and probably wind up voting Republican. So it is just real important to keep laughing, and one can always laugh. I mean, there are comedic elements in all this. Rumsfeld. What a barrel of fun he is. And there are times when you can't make up shit is good. The guy he wants to have as proconsul of Iraq is this guy Ahmed Chalabi, who's a convicted felon in Jordan. I mean, Jordan is one of our oldest allies in the Middle East. They might take it wrong. The delicacy and finesse of this administration is just so extraordinary. One of my favorite moments, perhaps one of the greatest moments in the history of diplomacy, you will notice that the State Department did not handle negotiations with Turkey running up to the war. That was done by the Pentagon, and particularly by Mr. Wolfowitz. And Mr. Wolfowitz said to the elected government of Turkey, we want to use your bases. And the elected government of Turkey, rather recently elected, said, you know, we'd really love to help you because we've always been good allies with the United States, but 90% of our people are opposed to this war. And we are going to have a really hard time helping you out. Whereupon Mr. Wolfowitz said, you know, I can go over your head to the Turkish Central Command. The Turkish and American military are very, very close. We supply them. We do joint exercises. And the Turkish military has been known to overthrow elected governments in Turkey. We were directly threatening our oldest democratic ally in the Middle East with a military coup in order to bring democracy to Iraq. Well, one can always be startled, can't one? I'm worried sick, but I really think, first of all, one of the most effective ways to deal with bad people is with humor. Satire is the weapon of choice for powerless people against the powerful. It always has been, and it works very well. God help us all if we ever have to take George W. seriously all the time. So I see no reason to panic just because things are really terrible. I tell you, some of it I think is, I was talking to this very interesting woman. She gave me her card. She's the Dane County executive here, Kathleen. Yeah. We talked at dinner, and she said, I said, I laugh more all the time. She said, I get angrier. And we were talking about how we had started in politics, and I said, I really think that there is a cohort question here. My first political involvement was the civil rights movement. And what happened to those of us who grew up in the South before the civil rights movement is that we saw with our own eyes, in our own, you know, there on the line, how much things can change and how fast things can change in this country, and how much difference government can make. I mean, there were times when, you know, when John Doerr and the Justice Department showed up, and it was like, God damn, it was like the cavalry was coming. It was just so exciting. Of course, in East Texas, I told Judge Justice, I was going to write my memoirs about the East Texas Civil Rights Movement and call it Nobody Famous Ever Came. It was the only tacky civil rights movement in history. It was East Texas. Nobody famous ever came. Stokely never came. Martin Luther King never came. The Freedom Riders never came. John Doerr and the Justice Department never came. CBS never came. There was nobody there but some uppity black people and a couple of us local communists, and we were frankly so culturally out of it that we used to get thrown into jail, and we did not know the words to "We Shall Overcome." We sang Bob Wills songs. So that even though the civil rights movement was a great and heroic struggle, I of course experienced it in East Texas at a tacky level, giving me perhaps an unduly odd view of great endeavor. Nevertheless, I think that having had that experience, one does not forget it. One is eternally hopeful about the possibilities for change in this country. And I saw it happen. I know it can happen. I'm sure as hell not giving up.
I guess my question would be, one of the things in politics that always seems to be forgotten is the judicial system, and there's been like a three-month filibuster going on with some of Bush's appointees. What's your take on the situation, and what can ordinary citizens do to influence the judicial process?
This is another one where speaking up and actually letting them know that there are real people out here who care, and real people who out here who vote, and real people out here who will work for candidates is really important. I cannot tell you how narrow the decision was to filibuster Priscilla Owen of the Texas Supreme Court. And the problem was the women. Dianne Feinstein actually said she had never voted against a woman candidate before and did not think she could bring herself to do it. And Lou DuBose and I have just finished a book, and one of the chapters was on Priscilla Owen of the Texas Supreme Court. By the way, one of the funniest things, if you just want constant amusement, the editorial page of the Wall Street Journal. Source of endless chuckles. Observed just the other day concerning Justice Owens of the Texas Supreme Court that her critics said that she was anti-abortion and pro-business, but there was nothing in her record to justify this. Whereupon I almost died right there at the breakfast table. It was touch and go there. The Texas Supreme Court is nine of the most right-wing, pro-property, pro-business. I mean, these people are so far out of line, it's unbelievable. And on that court, Priscilla Owen is considered by her fellow justices to be an extremist. The Democrats barely decided to filibuster her. And I think we got word up there in time, particularly a terrible case where she let this kid die, kid who was quadriplegic from an accident. Anyways, long, complicated story. It's all been in our next book. But it is critical because there is no question. We are looking at, I am not a conspiracy theorist. I don't believe in conspiracies. There is no vast right-wing conspiracy. It's in plain view. I mean, you know, it's all out there. And it is clear that this is, you know, all three branches of government is what they're going after. And they're not just after repealing the New Deal. I mean, they are after the progressive income tax, 1913. We are back to the McKinley era with these people and slipping backwards fast. And all those people like the right-wing legal group, who are they? The Madison Society? Did they actually call themselves after Madison? I'm going to throw up. What's it called? The Federalists. Yes, the Federalist Society. Thank God they didn't call themselves after Madison. They're absolutely serious. I mean, you look at it. The dramatic reduction already in the first 2 years of the Bush administration, reduction in civil liberties, and an equally remarkable increase in property rights. It is an amazing thing that they have wrought, and there's no question that they're doing it consciously, that Karl Rove is, the only thing that surprised me about Bush in Washington is that I did think, given the questions concerning the legitimacy of the election, that they would govern more from the center. And they have just gone balls to the wall from the beginning. Carl is very much a dedicated movement conservative. And that's what it is. They're going after Roe. They're going after the whole thing. And what you do is you write those senators up in Washington and you say, you guys keep pushing, keep pushing. And when the Republicans scream and yell and say, oh, you're borking our candidates, this is so horrible. Well, you know, one of the things we have in the troubles we have in this country is nobody can remember shit. We can't remember things that happened 10 minutes ago. Go back and look up the really excellent judges who were nominated by Clinton. I'm sure there were several out of this state who never even got a hearing from the Republicans. Just to do that to remind yourself. All right. How are we doing on time? Well, last question.
You've been waiting longer. Go ahead. Yeah.
Okay, I'm a little shorter here. In line with the profession of dissembling that you were mentioning, I have a question for this era. I found myself with a rather warm, fuzzy feeling toward Ari Fleischer the other day, and it surprised me. So
cherish those
I had
moments.
To look very much at the way his eyebrows had a sense of innocence. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering if you have a position on whether or not he has been Botoxed.
He can be amused. You know, I always think credit where credit is due. He actually said the other day, you know, Bush had this, the photo ops, the end all photo ops, you know, when he flies in on the aircraft carrier, oh, it was just, be still my heart. Every advanced man in the nation was just dying of envy. It was so fabulous. So Ari is prepping the press for this magic moment. And somebody says to him, well, how will we know if Bush is, you know, at the controls or not? He said, well, I tell you what, if the plane is flying in a straight line, it probably means the Navy pilot is in charge. Pretty good hint there. I liked it. A warm fuzzy feeling about Ari. You know, you could work up a wonderful thing like that. Ari Fleischer as an object of sexual fantasy.
Well, he does never seem to know anything.
Remember that wonderful song? Who used to sing that about I fell in love with John Foster Dulles? Ari Fleischer, Ari Fleischer.
I believe he's called Ari Bob by the president.
Ari Bob, huh? That's good. You know, in Texas, where I'm from, and you never underestimate the common sense of the American people. I was asking some people at this near Lano would be the best way to say it, Texas, what they thought about the war in Iraq, and they looked at me and said, well, don't you think we ought to get Osama bin first? Now, they're under the impression that Osama bin has two names like Jerry Jeff and Billy Bob. All right, beloveds, we're going to have to shut it off. I've loved it, and I will see y'all over the signing.